In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate, hello and welcome to Pure Home with me, San Hakju. Well, before we begin, we'd like to offer our congratulations on the auspicious occasion of Sacred Defense Week. And well, today we will be speaking about a very important topic, the Quranic family, which we've discussed before. We know that a family is the pillar of society, and obviously making a very special and holy family, a pure family, is a very important point in our lives. We'll have a very special speaker, and of course we'll have other segments to our program. We'll have from here and there a report and much, much more, so stay with us. Welcome back to the program. Well, we're very honored to have in our London studios joining us Dr. Saheb Mostaqim Blair. Mr. Blair is or was born in Heidelberg, Germany. He's a professor, and Dr. Saheb Mostaqim Blair is the founder and member of the Islamic Party of Britain, as well as the editor of the party magazine Common Sense. He is a professor of applied linguistics and translation and is a member of the Chartered Institute of Linguistics and Chartered Institute of Journalists in the UK. He also has translated several titles of Islamic literature from Arabic to German and authored several books in English. Dr. Blair is known for his dynamic lectures, pamphlets, dealing with topics of education, Islamic economics, politics, Muslim strategy, and other issues of contemporary interest. Well, assalamu alaikum, Mr. Blair. It's wonderful to have you with us.
Wa alaikum salam.
Well, so if you recall last time, just to give a brief recap for our viewers who have just tuned in, we did speak about the Quranic family, part one and part two. Today we're continuing on with part three. Now, last time we spoke a little bit about about mate selection and how to choose a spouse and other topics of how to create purity in the home and to create a Quranic family and a great environment to make it a blessed home. Today we want to branch out a little bit onwards, and we will be speaking, firstly we want to know a little bit about parents. We'll touch on the topic of parents and the respect that we're told to give our parents in Islam, and how does that affect the overall environment in the home, us respecting our parents?
Well, parents are of course people who give us the start in life. They do a tremendous job. They give up their days and their nights, especially when children are young. They worry for us, they provide for us, and they do so selflessly. So the Quran is quite clear that they deserve recognition, they deserve respect, they deserve that we treat them nicely. That's particularly the word that's used in the Quran, ihsan. So to be nice to them, nowhere, and it often gets misunderstood and sometimes also misused by parents who want their children to fall in line no matter what, as an understanding that we have to do exactly what our parents want us to do all the time without having a choice of our own. That's not quite the case. In fact, when it comes to matters of religion, the Quran even tells us that we must be careful not to obey our parents in things that run counter what we should be doing in order to obey Allah, and that we shouldn't follow them in something we aren't sure about. But we should not in any way cut them out or mistreat them or be harsh to them or speak up to them in an unpleasant way. So the real issue is that we reciprocate the kindness, the care, because parents, when you have children, even if your children are naughty, even if your children are misbehaved, even if your children have problems, even if they actually get on your nerves, and children often do, we don't kind of cut them out of our lives or treat them in an unpleasant way, but we actually bear with it because we have their best interest at heart. And when parents get older, especially, and have their own weaknesses and forget things and aren't quite as, let's say, on the ball anymore as we would like them to be, then it's quite easy for children to become impatient with them, forgetting that it took a lot of patience to actually bring them to that state of being young adults or middle-aged adults. And it is just as important that children have patience with their parents when they are old, that they continue to ask after their well-being, care for them, look after their interests, etc. So the Quran is quite clear that parents have a very, very important role in our lives, and that after the recognition and obedience we show to Allah, parents come first.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think the takeaway is, like you said, first we have to serve our Creator, we have to serve Allah, and so anything, if there's any discrepancy between what our parents tell us and what we're told to do in the Quran, we have to go by the Quran, we have to listen to God. But after that, we are to give our parents the utmost of respect, and like you said, I think it's just reciprocal as everything that they've done for us, despite the, I think, kindness that they offer us, many of us do not return that kindness when they get a little older. We do not put up with them, unfortunately, but we are told that that is of prime importance in our religion.
Well, the fact is that when it comes down to the crux, it is family, it is the bond between parents and children that lasts. Parents always have their children back no matter what. If parents marry their children off and the marriage ends up in a divorce, where do those children go? Where does that son, daughter go? Usually they end up back up with their parents.
Right.
If children are ill, parents are the first there to step in. If children are in financial difficulties, parents are the first to step in. It is parents and children. And the Quran also says, your parents and your children, you do not know who of them is of more benefit. So the point is that this role at some stage in life gets reversed, where parents become vulnerable, where they can no longer provide that support, where parents no longer have the economic affluence that maybe they had when they've supported their children, where parents have difficulties in life. And this is when children have to step up to the mark and realize that now it's their duty to support their parents no matter what, to help them no matter what, irrespective of what the situation is. And especially with people living longer nowadays and reaching an older age, often it is an age also described in the Quran where after knowing a lot, they hardly know anything. Dementia may set in. They may forget their children's important dates. They may even forget their children's or grandchildren's names. And it can be very annoying for a family, but we then have to remember that we owe them that kind of respect, to treat them with dignity, to always do not make them feel embarrassed about their situation,
right,
but support them unconditionally.
Because that's exactly what's happening. I think, Dr. Blair, we see a lot of people around us, unfortunately, they don't feel like they owe them. They feel like if they are taking care of their parents, they feel like they're doing them a favor. And unfortunately, we don't see it that way. We don't see that it is our responsibility, our duty to repay them for the kindness and all the sacrifices that they have given us. So it's better to take a look, I think, and realize that it is our responsibility to do this.
Well, it is a sad situation we are in nowadays, that because of this, shall we say, very pronounced individualism that we are being preached, that people look just at their own self-interest and what they can get out of life, and that, of course, caring for others not just parents, but generally caring for others, becomes a burden rather than a holy duty, becomes a burden rather than an opportunity mm-hmm. to both earn reward and also refine our own character and become better people through caring for others. So people don't always readily want to shoulder that mm-hmm. burden anymore. And society will in the long run suffer from that, because society is built on this mutual support network that operates in the family, the, mm-hmm. the close and extended family. And it is family where people feel safe. And the state can never take that role, and other organizations can never take that mm-hmm. role. And if that family is eroded, and if that mutual care within the family is eroded, then we have problems down the line. I mean, one of the key pieces of advice that the Prophet, peace be with him, gave us is that he who does not respect our elders and he who does not show kindness or mercy to our children is not one of us. Mm-hmm. So these are the two ingredients. Those who are older than us, we need to look up to them for guidance. And even if they don't necessarily live in our own world, how mm-hmm. we see it, they have a lot to offer because they've gone through life, they've got life experience. And those who are younger, they will make mistakes, but we must make allowance and give them a kindness and mercy and not be harsh on them, because they will grow up to be the people who are the pillars of society later right. and on whom we ourselves also will depend. So this structure, if it is broken, if it is not operative, then society will suffer, and we do see that around us.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay, well, we will go for a break, listen to our story, and of course, we'll be back.
The tail and the ear. Once upon a time, there was a donkey among the animals of a village. The donkey was very naughty and liked to go to different places a lot. The naughty donkey went to the farms and orchards of the villagers whenever possible and ate all their crops and made a mess. Little by little, the villagers got tired of the donkey and told its owner, "If you don't stop your donkey, we will treat the donkey that will be narrated in the stories." The donkey's owner promised to prevent the animal from being naughty. However, someday the donkey went to a farm and started to graze on people's wheat. Some people saw the donkey grazing the wheat, so they caught the donkey and cut its tail off. In the barn, the other animals laughed a lot at the tailless donkey. Among the animals, there was a wise donkey who said, "You can't bring back what has passed." The tailless donkey said, "Is it possible for a donkey not to have a tail?" "Yes, you are a donkey without a tail. What are you going to do now?" The tailless donkey moved its ears and said, "I can do it. I'll go to the place where they cut off my tail. I will find my tail and bring it back." As the barn animals heard these words, they started to laugh loudly. The wise donkey said, "Stop being naughty. Do you want to put yourself into more trouble?" The naughty donkey said, "In this way, something bad will become good. You'll see." The next day, the naughty donkey went to the place where they cut off his tail. It grazed on some wheat and then started to look for its tail. It was busy looking for its tail when it heard somebody say, "The naughty donkey is here. Come and help me catch it." "We cut its tail the previous time, and this time we should cut its ears." The donkey realized that he had made a mistake, but it was too late and regretting was of no use. The people cut both its ears and left it alone. The naughty donkey entered the barn. This time, the animals laughed so much that they became tired of laughing. Only the wise donkey was quiet. One of the animals asked, "Why don't you laugh?" The wise donkey said, "Why should I laugh? We donkeys should cry because as a result of this event, people will say bad things about all donkeys. What will they say? They will say, 'The poor donkey wished for a tail. It's lost both its ears before finding a tail.'" This proverb is used when people lose a blessing with their carelessness. Then they try to regain what they have lost, but they lose some other blessings as well.
Welcome back to the program. Well, we're joined by Dr. Blair in our London studios, and we're speaking about the Quranic family. And just before the break, we spoke a little bit about parents and our duties and responsibilities towards them. And before we move on to our next topic, I just want to finish off there with parents. Dr. Blair, I want to know, after our parents passed away, once they pass away, what is our responsibility towards them in that state?
Well, for each and every one of us, the situation is that when we leave this world, our deeds stop. We cannot work for our own advancement in the hereafter anymore. Right. So all that we leave behind is good deeds that continue, like an ongoing charity, mm-hmm. and children who pray for us and do things in our memory. And so it is important for children to do exactly that, to remember their parents, to visit their graves, to pray for them, to give charity in their name, to do good deeds in their name, and to mention their memory to other people in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So moving on, we want to know now, branching out to relatives and kin, what is our responsibility and duty towards them?
Well, this is again the next stage of people that are close to us that the Quran mentions specifically, dhul qurba, those who are near to us, meaning our relatives. And of course, there are various degrees of nearness. So some of our relatives are very close. We have grown up with them, whether they are aunts or uncles, sometimes taking the place of the parents even, whether they are grandparents, whether they are siblings, brothers and sisters, then it moves on to cousins and to second degree relatives and so on and so forth. This is what makes up the family. The family is not just one or two or three people. It is a lot of people who interact and who share a common belonging, and because they share a common belonging, they feel committed to each other, and because they feel committed to each other, they look after each other. That is the ideal of the Quranic family, that people feel they are obliged to look after each other. Not just that, they love each other and want to look after mm-hmm. each other, and they have that support, that mutual support, where nobody is ever left out and left alone with their own problems, but there is somebody to pick them up when they fall. So mm-hmm. so this is the concept, and of course in modern life this is quite difficult, mm-hmm. because in a traditional setting there was space for the family. In a modern city, where people live in apartments with one or two rooms, there is no longer any space for but the immediate family. Mm-hmm. And the extended family maybe visits sometimes on the weekend or whatever, but it is not a regular constant contact where people live around each other. And we are the poorer for it. But nonetheless, we have to try and keep those structures going. We have to try and keep them alive and positively nurture those relationships, because they are very important. They make up the society in which we live.
Mm-hmm. And what about people who cut off ties, whether it's over a brawl or a fight or family dispute, whatnot? Are we told anything about those kind of people?
Well, the better person is the one who says salam first. So to make peace is a good thing. That doesn't mean we don't have disagreements. Life comes with its all kinds of difficulties, and people fall out with each other over all kinds of things. And sometimes you have to cut ties as well. It's not like you can never fall out with anybody, because if somebody is harmful to other members of the family, if people are in any way abusive, then you have to do something about it. So the Quran again advises us, for example, in Surah Al-Hujurat, that if a party wrongs another, then you have to jointly approach and fight that party that is doing the wrongdoing, and then make peace between people. So peace has to come along with justice. But ultimately, we have to try and mend those broken relationships. And where they are severed, we have to try and make peace between people and help them along to make a fresh start and to be on talking terms to each other again. It is always the better option.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically, unless that person or that family or relative is harmful to the other members, then you need to maintain that relationship and keep a good relationship. All right, well, we will go for a break. When we come back, it's time for From Here and There. Welcome back to the program. Well, now it's time for From Here and There with my colleague Farhad Vafajou. In this part of the program, we'll have an interesting, informative article for you, a great book, and of course, a heartwarming email from you, our dear viewers. So over to you, Mr. Vafajou.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sarjou.
You're very welcome.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this edition of From Here and There. Good cholesterol through abnormal performance can have very bad effects on body and increase the risk of heart attacks. A study followed by the researchers at the Cleveland Clinic in the United States indicated that high-density lipoprotein, known as good cholesterol, has a complicated role in body. Good cholesterol normally benefits arteries to be clear and helps heart health, but the recent research unraveled that it could become abnormal and lead to blocked blood vessels. The analysis of 627 patients revealed that a current chemical change turned the normal good cholesterol into the abnormal one. While the evidence shows that having a higher ratio of good to bad cholesterol is beneficial for health, people should keep their healthy diet. Low-density lipoprotein, that is the LDL or bad cholesterol, is harmful because it is stored in the walls of arteries and induces heart plaques that can lead to blockages, resulting in heart attacks and stroke. Researchers believe that levels of abnormal HDL in the blood can be used to predict the risk of cardiovascular disease. I'm going to introduce the book, A Short History of Ilm al-Usul, written by Ayatollah Muhammad Baqir Sadr. The subject of the book is the knowledge of the principles of jurisprudence. The knowledge about the principles of jurisprudence is more profound than the knowledge of jurisprudence itself. The relationship between the study of jurisprudence and its principles is the same as it is between the study of logic and philosophy. For example, everybody knows that the price of a certain commodity shows an upward trend while that of another remains static. This knowledge is superficial, but the knowledge as to why the prices show an upward trend is a deep-rooted knowledge. The Holy Quran and the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet gives us precise commandments and edicts to adhere to the teachings of Islam in every walk of life, but all of these commandments have not been explained in detail. In short, the principles of jurisprudence is the study of those rules that are used in deducing Islamic laws from the Book of Allah, the Holy Quran, and the traditions of the Holy Prophet. And today we have another article instead of our emails. The Islamic Republic of Iran has ranked 18th in terms of science production in medicine in the world, according to the latest statistics released by several international scientific centers. Iran has garnered this high ranking from among 238 countries across the world. In 2000, the Islamic Republic ranked 53rd in the world in terms of highly cited medical articles, but improved to the 23rd rank in 2011. Iran has taken wide strides in science and technology in recent years, despite U.S. sanctions. Iran also ranked 20th in science production in the world in 2013, according to the recent statistics announced by Thomson Reuters. Meanwhile, Iran has also ranked first in the region and eighth in the world in science production in the field of nanotechnology. Well, that's it for this edition of From Here and There. Thanks for watching. Back to Ms. Arju.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vafaju. Now it's time for our report, and in this part of the program, we'll be continuing last week's Herbal Medicine Report, Part 2.
What we enjoy today are excellent scientific background and a vast country with the diverse climate, which is suitable for grow and production of medicinal plants. Iran's climate is somehow special and unique. Our efforts and experiences, especially during the last two decades, has made Iran a leading scientific center for the use of herbal medicines. Maybe it is interesting for our viewers to know that after many years of efforts, we have managed to establish the Faculty of Traditional Medicine in Tehran Medical Sciences University. As an academic center of excellence, and like other faculties, we have obtained the necessary certification and have excellent research facilities to carry out leading research in the use of herbal medicine. One of the majors of this faculty is traditional pharmaceutics, which mainly deals with medicinal plants. In this way, we have tried to revive what was once the honor and pride of the Iranian nation, and we have taken steps to make people familiar with the use of plants for medicinal purposes. The second issue of importance which I want to refer to here is the excellent quality of research which is conducted on medicinal plants, either those which are offered to people as a simple product or medicine, or those which are combined with other plants. Currently, we have very good products of medicinal plants and herbal medicines. We have observed universally accepted standards in producing our herbal medicines. Of course, we have been successful in other scientific fields too in the last couple of decades. You may ask, what is the importance of exporting herbal medicines? It is important because getting sick is inevitable, and people suffer from a range of diseases to varying degrees. Nowadays, of course, people's interest in medicinal plants and herbal medicines is much more than before. I think it is not fair to advertise against the use of pharmaceutical drugs and medicines and say that they're dangerous, but the developments in modern medicine and pharmaceutical drugs were useful anyway, and we should be grateful to them. We don't say that their share should be reduced and our share should be increased, but I dare to say that there are many diseases which cannot be treated with pharmaceutical drugs, but these diseases are amenable to treatment with the use of herbal medicines. This is demonstrated by previous experiences and by new research. map. Carried out excellent research in Iran in the use of herbal medicines, medicinal plants, and in pharmaceutical drug industry. And we have this potential in Iran to use medicinal plants as an effective way of curing sick people. In my opinion, the issue of medicinal plants can be used more effectively to improve people's health. There is no doubt that medicinal plants can be used to heal and to improve people's health. We will prove this in our scientific efforts and by our scientific research.
Back to the program. We're joined by Dr. Blair in our London studios, and we're speaking about the chronic family. And we want to know, Dr. Blair, we spoke about relatives and kin. Just to be clear, you touched on some of the relatives, as in aunts, uncles, some extended family. Who else is considered relatives and kin? Would your maybe your spouses, your in-laws, are they considered kin or relatives?
Yes, by virtue of marriage, of course, that circle of relatives, that circle of our family widens and increases, and that is an added blessing because it adds new dimensions, new perspectives, new ideas, new ways of doing things. So that is always a positive development. And it goes beyond that. I mean, the next category after parents and then relatives, of course, is our neighborhood. Our children play in the street, they encounter other children from other parents, from other families, and it is important that this is also a healthy environment. So you could think of this whole way Islam organizes our society as concentric circles. It begins with the immediate family, it expands to the wider family, the extended family, the families of our in-laws, as you mentioned, and then to our neighbors, to our neighborhood, our communities, and then from there to our townships, to our cities, to our states, and the global community. Mm-hmm. So it is like concentric circles. The important issue is to provide our children with nurture, to provide them with a safe environment where to experience life initially and gain in confidence, and then to move on and step up stage by stage from that close-knit environment of the home to that of the immediate vicinity of the neighborhood and of society at large, and to be guided and supported and helped at each step of that, which is why it is so important that this structure remains intact, because mm-hmm. ultimately, when we look at society, if we have a good society, then it supports, it has a safety net, it supports even the weakest, even those who are inclined to fall through the net, those who are inclined to trip up, it supports them. Whereas if we have a corrupt society, a bad society, then it will corrupt even the strongest, even those who live by the best principles mm-hmm. Will eventually be tempted by the trappings of that society. So we have to start at the home and build the world around us.
Mm-hmm. I think it's nicely put, because obviously a lot of people, you know, they have a lot of focus on their family and the family culture, traditions, religious values, and they keep it within. But unfortunately, that's where it ends. And like you said, even a lot of people who live in Western communities, Western societies, I would assume that the same would hold true there, right?
Well, yes, it does. And unfortunately, it is sometimes forgotten by Muslims living in Muslim ghettos, in all Muslim neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and pretending that the world outside probably doesn't exist. But mm-hmm. we live in a society that has different values and that doesn't share our principles in every regard. Now, the issue comes, of course, to life when the children become of school age. We send them to a school that is most likely a non-Muslim school. They meet friends that are non-Muslim friends. Mm-hmm. They tap into media that are non-Muslim media. They develop interests in films and music and whatever that is produced by non-Muslims for non-Muslims. Mm-hmm. So it would be kind of naive to think that we could just keep them with our safe family environment. We have to prepare them for the wider world. And that in turn means that if we want this wider world not to be a negative influence upon our own children, we must also engage with society. We must also be socially and politically active in order to shape that environment to become a better environment for our children to thrive in. We must take an active role in the school mm-hmm. that our children go to. We must find mm-hmm. out who their teachers are. We must understand what they're teaching them. We must try and get involved in the governance of the school, maybe mm-hmm. as school governors, etc., or parents' associations. We must try and involve in the neighborhood projects. That is all an integral part of the philosophy of family and society that Islam teaches, because it is only in this way that we can make sure that the society, the environment, the kind of playing field in which the next generation will grow up is a positive one that will help them to fulfill their purpose and be of benefit to others.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Nicely put. Okay, well, we will take a break and we'll be right back.
در جهان فرمان کوروش اولین منشور بود. سر به تعظیمش سراسر بابل و آشور. سینه اسپارت را تا قلب یونان چاک کرد. پشت بخت و نصر را ساییده و برخاک کرد. ما از اسلاف همان خونی از آن ریشه ای پاسدار نام پاک پاس تا همیشه ای. ایران هست خلیج یعنی فارس تاریخ میلرزد از خشم قوم پارس چوزین اگر باشد خلیج آبی نیست بی سایه ایران دیر از سرابی نیست آمیهن کاوه تابوت زحاک است این سرزمین از هر اهریمنی پاک است صدها هزار آرش جان در کمان دارند تیری اگر کاریست این عاشقان دارند هویت را در نام می جوید هر بینشان ناتار صدیابه می گوید چیزی که در صلح است از جنگ می خواهد قدرت اصالت نیست فرهنگ می خواهد ما وارث کوروش فرزند جمشیدیم پیروز بی برده بت نپرستیدیم ما ریشه دیرین در عشق و خون داریم ما در شب تاریک تا صبح بیداریم
هویت را در نام می جوید هر دینشان ناچار صدیابه می گوید چیزی که در صلح است از جنگ می خواهد قدرت اصالت نیست فرهنگ می خواهد ما وارث کوروش فرزند جمشیدیم پیروز بیبرده بت نپرستیدیم ما ریشه دیریم در عشق و خون داریم ما در شب تاریخ تا صبح بیداریم
Back to the program. Well, we hope you enjoyed that clip, and it's only befitting since we are celebrating the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. Just a correction there when we started off the program. So a very, very warm congratulations on the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. So moving on, we only have about 2 minutes or so left in the program, Dr. Blair, and I'm sure it's not enough to do this question justice. But just to end off, we want to know these acts of kindness, just to wrap up these acts of this closeness and these warm relationships that we should establish with our family, our neighbors, our relatives, our kin. How does this affect us personally to become closer to Allah?
Well, essentially, of course, we are on a journey, and we are on a journey of personal development, traveling towards the hereafter, and we have to stage by stage improve and rise through the challenges that life presents us with. And of course, in the family, where we are closest to people, where we can't just put on an impression and we wear a nice suit and people take us at face value, but they see us in all our how we are in all situations, the reality of us. It's a lot harder to practice what we preach. And so there is the challenge to try actually to be true to our values, to grow in kindness, to have a bigger heart, to try and be the better person, and when things go wrong, to try and mend them again. This is part of our own personal journey, our own personal development. This is part of us trying to be better people. And we practice that with the people who are around us, who are always around us, and that is the family, that is our extended family, our neighbors, and ultimately the wider society. So by engaging, it would be easy to just withdraw and become a hermit and just do our own thing. There is really no big challenge in that. But to do that in interaction with people who themselves throw up problems, who put the spanner in the works, who kind of may make it difficult for us, who have their moods and their tempers and so on and so forth, and their conflicting interests. That's where it becomes both interesting and demanding and challenging, but also much, much more rewarding. And this is the task we have to set ourselves and live up to it.
Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Blair. We've learned a lot, and thank you to our dear viewers for being with us, inviting us into your home. Don't forget, go on our website, sahartv.ir, check it out, and do drop us a line, send us an email. Your comments, questions are very much appreciated. purehome@sahartv.ir is our email. Thanks so much for being with us, and until next time, goodbye, and God bless.